You're listening to episode 35 of Fear the Boots interview series. In this interview, we talk with James and Kat of the One Shot Podcast. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 5 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Chris.
Nobody cares. And today we are talking with James and Kat from the One Shot Podcast.
What up?
Hello.
All right, James, Kat, for people playing the home game, who are you? What do you do? Why should they care?
Where How do you know Chris Hussey?
Why do you know Chris Hussey?
Why would you want to know Chris Hussey?
Chris, shut up.
Twit stalk them.
Yeah, he like legit stalked us, and like he is one of the kindest stalkers that we've had. He
gentle, cares about your feelings.
Exactly. Yeah. And cares about our publicity more than anything else, which, you know, if you're planning on stalking us but also gonna act as a PR rep, be my guest.
It is his job.
Has he told you about this stupid hot dish thing he has?
No.
Well, it's not like we've had extensive conversations.
I'd love to hear about it.
Forget extensive conversations. Chris usually leads off with this type of crap.
So we are the people behind the One Shot Podcast Network. We are a podcast network, I'm sure, very similar to Fear the Boot, because we talk about gaming and different nerdy gaming-related subjects, although we're less of a talky show and more of an actual play show. We've got two big shows on the network. One is One Shot, where we get improvisers from the Chicago area to sit down and play role-playing games, and we feature a different role-playing system every month on that show, and we oftentimes invite game designers and other notable nerds from, you know, around different nerdy circles to join us and play games and show off different systems.
And then we also have the Campaign Podcast, which, as its title suggests, is a long-running campaign currently set in the Star Wars Edge of Empire system. Similarly, it employs Chicago improvisers. We're really invested in showing off character development over long-form gaming and showing people the full experience. We think of these two actual plays as a way to teach people how to game, coming from a place of never having done it and looking for an entertaining way to understand what that book that they're buying is supposed to turn into.
Yeah, I mean, if you looked at any RPG book, you can see that they're intimidating volumes. Like, even the small ones are a couple hundred pages of rules, and that can be a difficult subject to broach. You don't want to spend a couple months learning the rules and organizing the game only to play it and find that it's not the game for you. So our show tries to distill those experiences into a couple hours.
I've got some thoughts on the actual play podcast, but there's a question I need to hit first. Actually, two. First off, you're pulling people from the Chicago area. Rough estimate, what percentage of your hosts are involved in organized crime?
Define organized crime.
Let's just say they're not going to prison unless somebody comes in and looks at their taxes.
Yeah, none of our performers, all of our performers
except for
are
you, right?
We're all legitimate business people.
Okay. Okay, Mr. D'Amato of the New York D'Amatos.
Yeah, we're fine.
If you're all in improvisational theater, you're not really paying any taxes anyway because you're not really making any money. Is that correct?
I mean, that was correct until like a couple weeks ago. Now we have to pay money.
Yeah, I just went ahead and put a note down here of 100%. So now my second question is, so did Chris tell you about the hot dish thing?
No, the hot dish thing. What is the hot dish thing?
Chris, well, let loose with the hot dish.
It's a regional thing, and the two of you might know it by its less common name of casserole.
Oh, yeah, that's less common.
Right.
Who the hell calls them casserole?
You know what? And here's the thing. A hot dish is one thing. It's one thing and one thing. It's made of X ingredients. It is always made the same. There's maybe little variations. It's one thing. A casserole is like a lot of different kinds of things.
Yeah.
You could have like...
But casserole has the added ingredient of vomit, usually, and that's what makes it a lesser being when compared to hot dish.
Knowing nothing about what this is, I will back Chris up.
Son, I know you're new to the show. You are back in the wrong horse here.
Yeah, really.
He's our only in.
You guys seem to be shooting
down
at him. I am the
show Cinderella, if anything.
Yeah, it sounded like you were shooting down at him on entry, and you have to know this about us. Right from the start, that we are avid Superman supporters.
Yeah.
Very anti-bullying up in this.
We punch up.
All right. Well, you know when Frank Nitti thought it'd be a good idea to go onto the roof of a building?
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of Chicago thinking you're doing right now. So
if you go onto the roof of the building, I will sensually come up behind you and remind you that life is worth living. So
I feel like I'm flying.
All right, so let's talk about these one-shot podcasts and the actual plays, because on our show, we have not delved into actual plays. We are going to do a very small number of them here simply because they were Kickstarter backer awards.
I'm totally down.
People gave us money to do them.
Yeah, so we will be doing a small number.
And you know what? I am totally down with doing APs. I like doing APs. I've done a couple of APs. It's just that there are certain hosts who are really, really super against doing APs. You might be one of them. No. I'm not sure, Dan.
You've historically been our biggest boat anchor on that. Well, you and Pat.
No, I haven't. Right, I've done AP. I have an AP on my website.
Chad, son, I know you're new to the show.
But don't make me flip.
So it sounds like there's some dead weight over there. It sounds like there's somebody who's holding you guys back.
Yes.
And is basically an albatross around your show's neck.
We won't say Pat's name. We'll just call him App.
Because we don't want to hurt his feelings. Right. Here's part of the problem with APs is that most of them forget the fact of what it is that they're actually trying to accomplish in doing an AP. And so it does become that session where you're all sitting around, you all do what you do when you normally role play a game, which, as Chad, as you have very wisely pointed out, it's role playing is not necessarily a spectator sport.
Yes.
Right. And what you guys, what the one shot does and what campaign does is you guys remember what it is that you're doing. And so the show and the showmanship, in a certain sense, is always kind of part of that aspect. And granted, certain things like the audio quality and the editing does make a big difference. And I think that that's part of the reason why, when it comes to APs, you guys have a little bit of an edge like that, because it still is entertaining to listen to. You still can follow the story, and there's a reasonable pace involved.
Man, you guys are right. He is a courteous stalker.
Yeah. That's why we got his back. He's our fan over there.
Dan, is that why we got him on the show? Was he stalking us and you didn't tell us?
Actually, I totally did.
That was oh my God.
Okay, so
it was absolutely
wow. There's a lot of revelations hitting.
Wow. Look, for years, Tex and I had a contract on the dude. All right, for screwing us over with all the stuff at FASA. And so when he popped up, it's like, we finally found him. He came on the grid. Yeah. It's like getting hit on his credit card or cell phone. It's like, we got to follow this lead. And so we just brought him closer and closer in. And one day that trap's going to close.
Well, to swing back a little bit to what Chris was saying, the point that he was making earlier, that is something that was a very calculated decision on our part, was to approach actual plays as a performance. I was actually asked to develop the show that we're doing, the one-shot show, for our comedy network, because our boss, Pat O'Rourke, is a big fan of Nerd Poker. And we like a lot of Earwolf shows. So he came to me and he's like, I know you play role-playing games. Can you put something together that is like this for us? And so I listened to a bunch of different actual play stuff. And I found the same thing, that a lot of it, you know, these were affable people who were sitting around the table hanging out with their friends. But there were people who would like eat on mic. And they would go on these long diversions, or the worst thing would be when there's just dead air. So we sort of came together and developed a show where that would not happen. And we took improvisers, because I know that these are a group of people who are used to playing pretend for a performance. So that's exactly what we put together when we put together the show, was something that was a performance but was also gaming.
Okay, let me repeat back what I just heard. You found a guy in Chicago named Pat O'Rourke who asked you to do a favor. The people he gave you showed you no respect, so you got professionals. Is that correct?
I don't discuss the business, Dan.
100%. All seriousness, you're talking about these APs. I think one of the great things that you guys are doing with the one shots is a choice we made creatively in our own show, is that we are system agnostic. Right. We might give examples from particular systems.
We had a dark time with Savage Worlds, but we're past that now.
Right. But when we talk about what makes a good character or what good table manners are, that is fairly ubiquitous, or at least mostly ubiquitous advice from one system, one game, one setting to the next. But one thing that does not allow for is if people really want to get a sense of what products are out there, what's worth buying, what kind of concepts are games using that maybe I want to house rule in, I'd never thought of before. That sounds like something your podcast, speaking here about the One Shot podcast, does a great job of offering that a show like ours, which is more agnostic, would not. Because as much as role-playing, we love to think of it as the art and the hobby, there is still a product layer to it that you have to deal with as part of the experience.
Yeah, I wouldn't call us agnostic, but I think we are zealots for everything that we play.
Yeah, we just really love games. That's part of our coming to all of this. We came in from a kind of unique college experience where we had a lot of people playing a lot of different types of systems. And after we broke out of the initial shell of just playing D&D, we wanted to explore everything. The entirely selfish aspect of One Shot is that this gave us an excuse to consistently game in different systems.
Yeah.
And we could say it was a work thing and have to meet those deadlines. So we get to do the thing that we've loved all along.
And you can stack a ton of free review copies.
Well, actually, we haven't gotten too many free review copies. The only ones that we tend to get free review copies for are games that are not out yet.
You guys are doing this all wrong. I expect more from Chicago Criminals.
We were doing it wrong. We were doing it very wrong. But I feel like for whatever reason, it's working out.
Well, actually, related to that, when it comes to, you know, because if you're doing these once a month and you're delving into games that you don't always necessarily know how to play, mm-hmm. that's a lot of rules to try and digest for a lot of different systems. And I know that you pull these people in. Do some of them have that rules knowledge, or is it primarily, you know?
No.
Gosh, no.
90% of the time, the only person who knows how to play the game is the person running the game. And we sort of have to teach the game as we play. And a lot of the time, I think you can even hear it on the show, is I am telling people when they should roll for something. What we do have is a group of people that can keep a story together even if they don't know how to do what they're doing. So they can still play their characters and give people an idea of, this is the sort of story and fun that you're going to have when you play the game, and what I'm doing is keeping the games that we're playing to their rules.
Right, and if we know that we want to showcase a game that has really interesting rules, we bring in specialists who we can trust with that material.
And like JPC is somebody who's on a lot of our shows because he, in addition to being an improv guy, is also a role-playing guy. And he doesn't study the rules beforehand because, you know, that would require convincing a comedian to do any work. He does like take to them very well because he's familiar with the general thing that you do when you learn a new game.
He's someone that we could trust to build his own character.
Yeah.
We call it Chad.
Well, and that's, and honestly, I mean, when it comes to the campaign podcast, that's certainly one thing that I've noticed. I mean, as individuals, you certainly all stand out in a certain way, but he as a performer definitely stands out in regards to the character that he has built.
Oh, yeah.
When he has business cards that say sex criminal, you know that he's definitely on the right track.
Yeah, well, I mean, even more so than him, I feel like Johnny is the breakout star of that show.
He's the heart.
It's the second time he's role-played. I ran a Pathfinder game for him, and he played like a goblin thief, and he was a joy to play with. And so when Kat's like, hey, let's do this project that's an ongoing show where the people that we're playing with have to be good, like
the people who are going to wind up being our best friends for the next X number of years.
I was like, this guy I've played with once before. He was great.
Yeah, and he's wonderful.
And Lenik is my favorite character on that show.
Ditto.
So.
Sorry, James.
and not to sit here and gush, but I'm just to go off of that. His character has a definite subtle appeal to it. There's things always going on there that I think, honestly, it's in a certain sense, when you watch certain shows, like really fast-paced writing shows, you miss a lot of things. You almost have to double back and re-listen or re-watch it to, you know, pick up some of that stuff that was in there.
Yeah. And on top of that, I feel like he allows himself to be vulnerable with the character in a way that I'm not always used to seeing around a table. And it's really refreshing and cool from a GM perspective to have someone that open to experiencing emotions actively.
Yeah, that's something that playing with improvisers I've noticed a lot is that there are a lot more emotionally driven choices. And when I sit at a table with a bunch of gamers, usually it's very strategic minded moves being made by people. But with improvisers, they open themselves up to be overwhelmed by impulses that their characters have. And it leads to these crazy moments that we end up in with our games. Now, playing with gamers is fine. Like the L5R game we did was, you know, mostly gamers, and it was still really dramatic and fun. But playing with improvisers has led to situations that I never would encounter anywhere else.
Let me ask you guys a question about production. We started to hit on this earlier, but I want to develop it a little more. If we look at the range of a production that's not being passed out live, then obviously we've got a spectrum we can run from it's highly edited, it's highly controlled, maybe even a little bit scripted, you know, really polished to give you this specific experience, to on the far opposite end, we're going to drop an Omni mic in the middle of a table. Whatever happens, happens. We don't have time to record 4 to 6 hours of raw. We put it live and people consume it or don't as it is. Where do you guys fall in that? How much production, editing, cleanup, scripting, whatever goes into the process of making your shows?
Sure. I'll talk about campaign a little bit because that's the one that requires the most, you know, pre-planning thought. Since it's not episodic, there's a lot to handle there. Let's do post-production first. We get this question a lot, that how much audio turns into the 1 hour that you're used to getting from us every week. And I'd say it ranges from an hour and 15 to sometimes an hour and 30 recorded. Edits down just in terms of me taking out pauses, me taking out needless mouth sounds.
Or whether or not you forgot to turn the mic off when we took a break.
Definitely. Yeah, that factors in.
So let me interrupt you real quick. Hour 15 to hour 30 mm-hmm. released off of how much raw?
Oh, no. So an hour released after an hour 30 raw.
Okay.
That is a lot of pauses. That's if we stop to look up the rules.
Not so much. We pause the recording when we stop to look up the rules. Sometimes they go on tangents, like you see at any table. So if there's things that aren't serving any aspect of the story, if someone starts talking about their dog, that's not going to make it on the show. Everything else, pretty much, I'm interested in experiencing this along with them. So that's just like the technical aspect of editing. In terms of curating the experience, though, I plan a lot with my campaigns. I have a notebook that I keep that has a timeline of things that I eventually want to get to. I am somewhat of a sandbox GM, so I have all these things set up. I think about it constantly, and I work on these characters in the background. But I think that the value in the sort of experience that we have, especially with these gifted improvisers, is collaboratively telling a story. So I leave as much agency as I can in their hands, and I just control the background matter. I think that's the coolest thing about an actual play, is that we're a radio drama, but we aren't coming to you completely scripted. In fact, I don't like it if the guys try to... Sometimes they ask me, like, where do you want me to be by the end of the session? I'm like, I just want you to play.
Yeah. And notoriously, there was a 2 to 3 episode arc that she planned for us, and we spun it into 10 episodes, yep. 5 of which were exclusively about shopping.
That's what was important to them. And sometimes that's important to people around a table. So.
But you know what? But that actually, from a game master's standpoint, then, you had a certain goal in mind and a certain timetable in mind, and your players had a completely different one in that sense. They went off on their own. From a GM's perspective, how does that make you feel? You know what I'm saying? As far as, do you just go ahead and just roll with it? How much do you try and influence and try and move things along? Or do you see, you say you like the sandbox, but at some point, the sandbox does have to have some sort of borders, or doesn't it in your case?
No, I actually feel like I don't have a lot of problem steering them towards the things that I want them to do. They're really responsive. I mean, that's part of their thing is to say yes and, so if I suggest something, they're going to go with it. It's pretty easy to push them towards things. When they go completely off the rails, I'm mostly hoping that I can keep up with them and make sure that the experience is enjoyable on their end, because at the end of the day, like, I want this to be exciting for our listeners, but I also want it to be exciting for the people around the table, and that's a thing that they enjoy. So if they want to go shopping, we're going shopping.
Do you feel that's a little bit of a limiting factor if you go with the yes and, in that you may not explore parts of the system that they would chase on their own if they weren't trying to follow a lead?
I'm going to interrupt you because I'm going to answer that question, not for you though, but for myself, because I'm an improv GM as well. I don't take a lot of notes. But like you said earlier, I'm constantly thinking about it.
all the time I'm thinking about what's going on in the game and what the characters can do. And I totally am behind you on, you know, if the players want to go shopping, if that's what they're interested in, it's not my job to convince them that they're wrong. It's my job to convince them to make the experience fun. And also to balance, and to answer your question, to balance, so I have this other stuff going on that they're not interested in.
Yeah.
They're interested in shopping. The fault is with me because they're not interested in this other stuff because I'm not making it interesting enough.
Well, right. Or maybe it's just not catching me because, like, if you're like, hey, there's this really cool thing over in this town, we're like, yeah, it sounds boring. We're going to go here instead.
I got to ask myself, maybe it does sound boring.
Well, that's what I guess that's what I'm asking. Is,
I don't think you should beat yourself up
much. Not
that's
I
one
do.
Thing with with it, that a lot of people don't understand about improv. It's not that you abandon what you come in with just to work on something with somebody else. You're taking to the table your ideas and your creativity and your energy. So when you get confronted with a shopping trip and you had an elaborate and interesting combat planned out like Kat did, we had to raise funds to buy the things that we wanted to buy, so we had to move some cargo, and the deal went bad, and we got in a fight. So all of those ideas are still valid, and it took our passion for buying things and Kat's passion for an interesting podcast that people would want to listen to, and it mashed them up beautifully.
Right, and then I really enjoy whenever they're putting forth those side quests, if you will, finding ways to pepper in enough of what I had going on anyway to keep things on theme, or to draw them back into elements that are potentially interesting and seeing what they catch on to. If we lose track of the setting, that's on me. So I don't much have an interest in letting that happen. You know, that they're still going to get info about like stormtrooper routes while they're on the streets. They're going to be reminded that they're in Star Wars because that's the game that we all agreed to be playing.
Right. Right.
Let me ask you a question then about the one shot series of shows, because I certainly see that with a campaign, you could get that in 1 hour installments, especially if you distill out a lot of the side banter and such and get a meaningful progression. And by the way, I think it's great you release it in an hour, because I think one of the things that I struggle with a lot of AP podcasts, and some people love this, so you know what? More power to them.
No, if they love it, they're wrong.
Yes. Like Hot Dishes. But, you know, these shows can go on for 4 to 6 hours. You know, if you guys get that out in an hour, great. It's a little bit easier to consume. But it seems like with a one shot of a new system, how long do those episodes go? And if they're a short, how do you distill that game down into a single hour?
I hate to say it because it's sort of like an underwhelming statement, but it's really easy.
Well, so I think that there's first a misconception. We encounter a new system roughly every month. It's recorded in one session, but that session can be 2 hours, depending on the system, up to 6 hours.
The session is usually even longer than recording because we need to take bathroom breaks and eat or whatever. But there are usually about 2 to 6 hours of raw audio that gets edited down to 1 hour chunks. And that is, you know, usually our game or, you know, rarely two games for the month. But the stories, I think, because if you look at a one shot, it's sort of like a movie and people are playing through a movie. Movies have acts and there's definitely enough meat on each 1 hour chunk of the story to carry it from week to week. And the experience of that role-playing system is folding out in front of you, and you get to experience and focus on little bits at a time, and that builds the overall experience. It's something that, like, I thought that it might be a challenge to learn the rules. It might be a challenge to play these games faithfully, which I don't always do. I've had plenty of experiences where I have messed up certain rules, but if you can get people the broad strokes idea of the game, it's easy.
Right.
And usually I don't go in with a plan. I just go, I know the rules. Let's sit down and do this.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe where my mind gets hung up a little. So I think about certain games, Fiasco, Inspectors, Fate. I could give you a pretty good sense of how the game plays and kind of, you know, what's possible in there in the course of an hour, hour and a half. But if I think about a game, let's say like BattleTech, especially if you mix back in the RPG elements from MechWarrior, there is no way I could show you that game in an hour. And I don't even know how I would distill it down without cutting off such major portions of the game experience that it really, I don't think, would communicate fairly what the game was about.
Story games are easier to produce. It's just the way that they're designed meshes very well with entertainment gaming. But I look at larger systems like that, like Shadowrun, which is one of my favorite games.
We've Shadowrun.
Only featured it on the show once, and it's partially because I haven't learned 5th edition yet.
Right.
I'm going to do that very soon. I don't think all of the rules in even a super crunchy game is actually the experience of that game.
No, I would agree with that. But if we take Shadowrun as an example, it kind of strikes me that interaction with spirit totems, astral space, decking, the corporate stuff versus what the Barons is like. I mean, things that right. I could say, I mean, I realize obviously you cannot get to every little nitpicky detail of the setting or system, but things that I would consider real marquee level items, you know, I think,
we can easily do that. When we eventually get to Shadowrun, we're just going to set it in Shadowrun Chicago setting. I love that setting. We know it pretty well.
There's a lot of bugs, and I
don't know. I also love Wrigleyville turning into white territory. You know, that whole, it's great. And because it's Chicago, it'll be easy to bring all of the improvisers in. They'll understand what we're talking about when we start talking about Lakeshore.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the appeal of Shadowrun to me, like, there are those little granular things in the system. You can go, oh, holy crap, I really like the Matrix. I really like Astral Space.
I really like
the
D6s.
Specific part of the game. Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
You can have those little revelations, but that's not the experience of the game or the way that I would pitch the game. If I pitch the game, I'm saying it is D&D and Blade Runner together, and that's something that everybody understands, and all the other stuff I can allude to, and if that's something that appeals to you, you're going to find more when you pick up the game yourself.
Let me ask you an either-or question when I realize the answer here is probably going to be a little bit of both and, but I'm going to phrase it in either-or fashion just to highlight what I'm getting at.
He's going to do his best to box you into a corner.
Okay, let's say I'm sitting down. I want to show off a system that has a lot of complexity to the rules, to the setting, whatever. It seems like I certainly have an option here to go, broadly speaking, one of two ways. To either say, well, we're going to play the game, we're going to tell a good story, and what we touch on, we touch on. What we don't touch on, we don't touch on. So I'm going to tell a story, and if these guys end up stuck in astral space for the next hour, then that's just what the game is going to be, and that's what we're going to show. Or conversely, you could have it a little bit more engineered and say, okay, to really tell the core story of Shadowrun, we feel these are the most important themes, and we're just not going to deal with astral space or the Matrix, apart from maybe some high-level roles and concepts. Is there somewhere kind of along that spectrum that you guys look for a balance to handle games that have stacks and stacks and stacks of books?
That's a GM preference thing. James likes to go in and do things more off the cuff and improv. That's his background, and he's comfortable reading people at the table in that way. I don't have an improv background. I studied lit and Shakespeare. If I care passionately about a system, they're going to be things that I want to bring up. So we might just chuck a more finicky thing at me. It depends on how we want to handle X thing.
Yeah, and I am of the school when I am featuring a game on One Shot. I actually recently had this conversation because we're working with a lot of new game designers who are designing their first game or trying to get their first game published. What we do usually from May through Gen Con is just feature a bunch of new games. And I spoke to all these designers and said, can you tell me about your game in 3 sentences? I think every role-playing system can be boiled down to 3 sentences or less. And if you can't do it, then you are trying to do too much.
I boil my game down to 1 sentence.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you should have to do. And I am going to show our audience that 1 sentence when they listen to the show, because that's what they need to know in order to understand whether or not the game is for them.
Right. And then for larger things, like we did just have that whole L5R thing.
But the ingenious part of that, Jim, was like, I really like the fact that you don't fight a lot and that the dueling rules are cool. And he told me, you know, when he was designing that session, That's all that mattered to him.
Absolutely. But that's the, so he picked a cool part of the system. He loves that system. He wanted to show it off well. Mm-hmm. So he used our talents in the way that he thought we would best show it off to showcase a segment of it that would give you enough of the game to know whether or not it's your thing.
And we had people, you know, write into us and tell us that they want to play L5R now, which is a system that has such a complex backstory and is very, very crunchy. It's unapproachable in many ways, but because he distilled the game down to its most appealing components, at least in his mind, he was able to, with our help, produce a series of episodes that I think speak very well of the game.
Well, and you know, to sidetrack here a little bit, you guys were talking earlier about the fact that a lot of role-playing games are intimidating or impenetrable, probably doubly so if you're new to the hobby, because you see these big books and don't even really know how to consume them. But I gotta give credit where credit is due in that there's an increasing number of companies that are releasing quick start guides, 10-page PDFs. I mean, heck, right now I'm holding in my hand a pocket mod by a friend of the show named Stuart Robertson. It's called The Weird West. It is literally an entire role-playing game that is printed on a single side of a single piece of 8.5 by 11 paper and then folded into a book. And, you know, I have to give credit to these people for making simpler entry points into these more complex games, which I have to imagine would only help things, because it implicitly, if not explicitly, communicates to you guys what the creators think the game is most about.
Yeah, that's so funny. We almost never use those quick start rules or beginner boxes when we do games.
Yeah, but there's huge value in them because we have so many friends that we know through comics and other nerd things who want to play D&D but haven't ever had the chance, and they can grab any number of things after asking us to name a system that would suit them.
Yeah, because they can go look at that box and go, okay, that gives me everything I need to play the game. I can buy that, and I can be playing that game by tonight if I'm a quick reader.
So let me ask you guys some questions about you personally. Let's say tomorrow night I'm going to strand you on a desert island for 10 years. You have one game and only one role-playing game. It can be one you created. I don't care. It doesn't matter what it is, but only one role-playing.
Sat phone the role-playing game. That's what I would have.
No off-island communication or resources.
Wilson, the role-playing
game. Box of food, the role-playing game.
Inflatable boat and flare gun, the LARP.
That's such an interesting question, because we could either answer it based on having the full rule set, or just making sure that we have all of the materials that we need to make every other game.
It has to be one game. No improv-y, improv-ing rules, that is. No adding components. Whatever it is.
No adding components.
Yeah, whatever it is, you have every source book for it ever made, but that's it. No pencil to write
in
your own.
I would pick the game that has the single most amount of books with the highest page count, so that I could use them for fire
and wiping your ass.
My ass.
All right,
and then make my own games.
But I want to.
I'll give an definitely an unpopular opinion.
Okay,
that's typically people ask us just what our favorite system is, and James and I both go feng shui,
yep,
and then we
feng shui.
Talk about things that we really love about it. But if I could only play one game for the rest of my existence, I'm going to pick something that I know very well, that has a lot of books, that I get an immense amount of joy from, and that's D&D 3.5. That's what I came into things on. I like Epic Level 6, so if I get to, I will do that mod from the start.
Mm-hmm.
And I can play variations on that forever, given those books. I could make it into
any
game that I want.
That's a lot of toilet paper.
Kat, you just went up a notch in my mind for picking. I'm apparently
what
one
is
of,
it? Is it? Is
shut
it
up,
the crunch?
Chris. I'm apparently one of two people in the world.
Oh yeah, because I've been talking so much this whole time.
That would pick 3.5 over Pathfinder.
Yeah, I know.
And it's nice to meet the other
nice
person.
It's nice to meet you. That's I got in an argument with a Pathfinder designer about prestige classes, and my whole thing was like, no, I know it's not balanced. That's not what was fun about them to me.
And that's certainly not what's fun about Pathfinder. If you're going into Pathfinder looking for balance, you are in the wrong place. Get out of that neighborhood.
We've gone this far. I have to ask one other question. In my Google chat thing, do you recognize the character that's on screen when I talk?
So I don't. I'm pretty new to Transformers. I'm learning. That's the...
Yeah, that looks like a Beast Wars person.
Okay. Let me educate you. All right. Because see, if you'd gotten this one right, I was going to start really bemoaning the fact that I was already married, because I was going to think I had found the one. But apparently I didn't.
Yeah, you didn't make a mistake. Well, there
Let
you
me
go.
Tell you the you got story. It. That is Unicron, Orson Welles' final role before he died. That was the pinnacle.
That's Unicron?
That is Unicron. He reached the pinnacle of his career, said, I'm Unicron, mic drop, gone. And that was the end of his life.
Right. That's We've seen the start to that movie so many times, but we've had trouble
that's
torrenting it.
That's all you need.
Because the rest of the movie sucks.
It is. The rest of the movie's terrible. But the first 20 to 30 minutes, I think, is the best Transformers that has ever been made. The only that first 20 to 30 minutes. The rest of it's terrible.
And Unicron is filled with green penis.
There's a critic reference for anyone who remembers that show. James, what about you? One game.
One game. It's a tough call. It is. I think that the game that I would play forever has not been made yet. I feel like there's some potential with ideas that are sparking between me and Kat, but right now it doesn't exist.
So life is a lot of disappointment for you.
I think, like, I really do like Shadowrun a great deal. You know, it's a game that's set in America. You just can't beat that. And there are a ton of books that you can dive into, and it's also super hackable. It's got a really long history. If you go back and like include Earth Dawn as part of the canon, you've got a ton of potential for playing across a big timeline. And if I am forced to use somebody else's setting, I'll do it that way.
You know what my problem with Shadowrun is?
You're a joyless individual. And
probably.
Yep.
Too broken on the inside.
Yep.
No. It's going to... Dan, I'm going to define this and you're going to agree with me.
Okay. I'm playing this game.
To my knowledge, I could be wrong. I'm not a Shadowrun fan. So, I mean, I'm sure that there might be some book out there where this proves me wrong. And I would actually like to hear about it if it is.
Okay.
Everything I've read in Shadowrun and all the editions and all the maps I've looked at.
Okay.
St. Louis is completely undefined. In fact, St. Louis, most of the time, runs on a border between two nations.
Okay, I can accept
that. So you don't even know what nation it's in.
I can accept that, and here's why.
Well, how does that not make St. Louis interesting?
Well, no, okay, yeah.
And that's the thing.
Okay, well, let me tell you this.
If there's a border dispute in St. Louis, you just made it interesting.
If I have to define everything about the setting, I'm going to make my own damn game. I do frequently.
Yeah,
so.
All right. And the only reason I accept that, you are absolutely right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But the reason I accept that is because if you look at almost any cultural map of the U.S., you look at any political map of the U.S., anytime they're like, we're going to draw borders between the most this and the least that, the farthest north, the farthest south, the farthest east, the farthest west, St. Louis is always in a border.
Right, and undefined.
Yes, it is always...
St. Louis is not on the right or left of the border. St. Louis is the black dot that is in the black line of the border.
Exactly. Like
that just makes it more interesting. Yeah. They divided Denver, I think, into six parts. There are six different jurisdictions that you're dealing with. That's cool. If you are a border city, obviously that's a terrible place to live, but it's a great place to tell stories about.
I'm sure
because
it is.
There are going to be a lot of people killing each other.
Why do I need Shadowrun for that?
But I think, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of actual geography, Kansas City is the most central city of the U.S. But I believe if you look at cultural maps, population maps, so on and so forth, the center point of the U.S., north, south, east, and west, moves very, very close to St. Louis. And so I can accept that. But, James, there's a question here we've got to get cleared up.
Of course, yeah.
Which edition of Shadowrun?
The most broken edition, and that is fourth. That's the one that I cut my teeth on. I jumped directly out of 3.5 into the deep, vacuous pool that is Shadowrun 4th edition.
So you never played first?
I have not yet played first.
Okay.
First is awful.
Third, yeah.
You know how you pick up a certain number of skills in school, probably like 99% of them, that you never actually use in real life? And one of those is diagramming sentences.
Yeah.
I have only once, this is a true story, God's honest truth, only once in my entire life have I ever sat down and actually had to diagram sentences to understand something, and that was Shadowrun First Edition. I could not follow the rules until I diagrammed the sentences and actually figured out exactly what the subjects were.
And you're crunchy math guy.
Yes, I'm crunchy math guy and an English major. And I was English as a science, not English as an art. And I could not follow what they were saying in first edition. It was a freaking abortion of a rule system.
I will tell you that having to learn a new game, at least one new game every month, has given me a much greater appreciation for editing as a skill for publishers.
God, how about indexing?
yeah, that's why a lot of new games show up on the show. A lot of people go like, oh, why don't you play this old system? And part of the reason is it's tough to learn because it's poorly written.
Yeah, it's poorly constructed.
James, I do have to say, I do like your choice, not because I enjoy the game Shadowrun as well, but also because you made the comment about the implied relationship. And I don't think FOSSA ever came out and explicitly said it, but the heavily implied relationship between that and Earthdawn.
And Earthdawn. Oh, yeah, they're the same thing. Yeah. That's, in my mind, they're the same thing.
Clearly, they were very, very much the same thing. But I always enjoyed the cheeky responses that they would give at Gen Cons when people were trying to, you know, corner them and get Tom Dowd to actually answer the
Isn't
question.
Isn't there a trinity? One is in the past, and then Shadowrun is in the middle, and then Earthdawn is in the future?
No, Earthdawn is in the past.
Earthdawn's the past.
Earthdawn's past. Shadowrun's present. I believe there was some kind of thing on the future.
Published.
Yeah, I don't think it ever actually got published. I think.
Which one?
I don't know.
The Project X.
Chris, I'll put it this way. I came to find out that I actually know a bunch of unpublished canon for a couple of FASA games, and I won't give it away on the show because I'm going to use it as plot material when I GM. I think there was a game that they were going to tie back into the future of Earthdawn or Shadowrun or that whole continuity, but I don't think it was ever released, and I don't remember the name of it. We'll just call it Hot Dish.
We both know it was Renegade Legion.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to go back to the improv for a second there, just to jump way back. Have you guys ever found that, I mean, because obviously you were talking about the strengths of that and how it relates to what you're doing and stuff, but is there a detriment to that? Does the improv sometimes get in the way of the enjoyment of the game? And this may be whether it's on the mics or not on the mics, that, as you have found.
No, I can answer that openly and honestly. Or like, I don't think any skill can be a detriment to gaming. The same thing, I don't think power gaming is a detriment to gaming, because that is just a skill that you acquire. If you learn a system really well, eventually you are going to start optimizing your characters, whether that is for sheer power or for the most story that you can cram in there. Kat and I are both hideous power gamers.
Disgusting.
And I think it's just the energy that you use it with and the attitude that you have when you go into playing the game. There are definitely sessions that were on one shot. An episode that is definitely a fan favorite, The Three Rocketeers, PK Sullivan, who is a wonderful designer who's like up and coming in the design world, is designing right now for the Fate Patreon campaign a game called Three Rocketeers, which is a title that sells itself. You know exactly what you're going to get out of that.
An offensive video.
And I brought in three of our most creative improvisers, Alex Manich, JPC, and James Dugan. And they play so well off of each other and have so much fun, but they were so into their own thing, it was difficult for PK to get a word in edgewise and promote the very real and important role-playing setting that he was trying to promote. He wanted us to go on an adventure that was full of intrigue and fun, and we ended up dressing up as nuns and cleaning a monastery for a month.
Yeah. And I'll say that I like running for improvisers. It's fun. But part of starting up campaign for me was I like what we do on one shot, but the short nature of them lends themselves to more of a comedic nature than I always enjoy at the table. That sometimes I like people to be serious and get dramatic and solve spooky mysteries. And if we try to do spooky mysteries on one shot, it rapidly turns into Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Which is great. It's just not always what I want. I find that we've, between our two shows, found a lot of ways to balance all of our personal wants, but there are still things that I don't think we're hitting. I think we could get them on mic. We need to find the right group of people.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we always will. You know, so for at least for a little while with me, if I game off mic at all, it's probably going to be more Call of Cthulhu type stuff, because I miss it.
That's an interesting question. Does this kind of take up so much of your time and energy that you guys don't have a, for lack of a better phrase, non-performance gaming group? Or do you guys have your own games and game sessions that have nothing to do with that podcast or those podcasts?
The podcasts certainly take up a lot of time. the ethos that I go is I'm always playing games that I'm interested in playing. So it's never taking time away from games that I want to play. But to directly answer your question, I have two games that I am involved with right now. I do an ongoing dungeon world for a couple of my comics friends, and that's a lot of fun. We are all very busy, me with the podcast and them with art, that it does get difficult to schedule. It usually goes once every month or two. But I'm also with a couple of my improv pals hoping to start up a new Shadowrun game that I'm very excited about so I can finally learn 5th edition. So yeah, I do make time to play games in my own private life because I really, really like games and I would rather be doing that.
Gosh, I live far out of the city at this point in my life, so I just don't have access to the same friend group. So if I'm coming up to the city to game, it's usually for something that we're doing with the show. I still make time to play board games, though. Tabletop RPGs aren't the only type of games that I like playing, so they still feature largely in my life. But I don't know. Most of my time is spent writing, reading, or playing games for the work James and I are doing. And it doesn't feel like I'm missing out on anything.
Certainly not.
It just feels like we're really focused on our work. And I like that. I'm a bit of a workaholic.
Now that the Patreon is going so well, we have a lot more time. I have like a full day every week to do more stuff. I can get all my editing done on one day now. And that opens up so many weekdays for things that are really important to me, like, you know, role-playing games or board games or
pornography.
My girlfriend.
As someone who is very into puppetry and such, before we were recording, you showed me this vampire Muppet.
Vlad.
Yes, Vlad. Okay, so Vlad, he has a name, which you apparently got from the same website. There's this place that does officially licensed Muppets, you know, actually built with similar construction and such as the real ones that I got my old Jewish biker from. And I'm curious, how does he fit into the show? What are his gaming tastes? I really hope you're not discriminating against.
So Vlad has showed up on, I think, 2 series. I know his voice made a cameo, but he was actually playing a character. He was playing Lucien the first time he showed up.
Sure.
But he showed up very recently when we played the witch role-playing
system.
Yeah,
and he showed up as full-blown Lucien. Full-blown Vlad. Should I give background on Vlad?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
This is Cat
so
Murphy's...
Vlad was a Christmas present.
This is the main
present.
Topic of the show is Muppets and Star Wars.
Who has their hand up Vlad's butt?
James does.
Okay, James. When James is playing Vlad, do you ever worry that he actually might legitimately be in a fugue state? If the answer is yes, get help. If the answer is no, he's a terrible puppeteer.
I'm not a great puppeteer, but
no,
Vlad is very real.
Vlad's really real to us because James once made the ridiculous sweeping statement that he hated all vampires.
This was at the height of vampire popularity in
our
culture.
So does Vlad ever do things you didn't expect or didn't see coming? Like, do you and he have like arguments when no one else
Vlad
is around?
Vlad likes original Batman. He likes Detective 27 Batman.
Batman with a gun.
Batman when he had guns and killed people. And that is definitely an idea that I don't agree with, but Vlad feels very firm about the original incarnation of that character. So, definitely. And I can extend this beyond Vlad, who is a wonderful person, and we should talk more about him. But any character that I play through improv, or especially on the show, they have ideas that I did not think I was going to express. When you get into any character, like, it's fun to let them lead you.
There was something that we talked about on our show a couple episodes back, and I was fuzzy on the exact nuance between two words, and I had to look it up just because my brain blurs words together, which is sympathy versus empathy. And sympathy is when you can understand the emotions someone else is feeling, whereas empathy is when you can actually internalize what someone else is feeling. So if I cut my hand and you feel bad for me, that's sympathy. If I cut my hand and you actually feel that pain yourself, or your brain simulates that pain, then that's empathy.
Lupita Nyong'o, who's going to be in Star Wars, so is someone I'm keeping tabs on, recently said something very... She was just talking about acting in general, and she basically just said it's just an exercise in empathy. We have within us the capability to be any person because the wide range of human experience isn't all as varied as you can conceive. Yes. You know, that there are many variations, but you are capable of being any other human on Earth. And acting is just an exercise in finding that empathy and giving yourself over fully to those moments and experiences.
And that's kind of what I wanted to hit on, is people have varying levels of capacity for empathy. Some people are incredibly empathetic to the point that they actually have psych disorders where they cannot discern themselves from other people. Some people are on the opposite extreme, like psychopaths, where they really can't empathize or sympathize with another human being. And obviously, the vast, vast majority of people fall somewhere in the middle. But it seems to me like the people that have the most empathy tend to have two traits. One, they tend to be somewhat better role players in terms of the diversity of characters they play, because they can imagine a much broader range of people. They are not as stuck in their own experiences as other people might be.
I kind of disagree a tiny bit. That is a very good point, in that that is a really good pathway into a certain kind of role playing. And I think it's certainly the one that I tend to do the most, is trying on different faces. But I have played with plenty of folks who have a lot of really great qualities, and I would not count empathy among any of those qualities. Not to insult them, but like they still play damn good characters. They're just very specific and less rangy.
Yeah, and certainly I'm admitting here, this is all argument from anecdote, but in my experience, it's been like, when I really chase those people down to the core, they can play great characters to a point, but eventually you hit a foundation of sand, because they really couldn't quite get in the head of somebody that's that far out of their own experiences, that they can kind of get there, you know, maybe even convincingly get there in terms of a veneer. But if you really try to play it out, and once, I'm not going to say that this is fully descriptive of all people in all places at all times, but just that I see a value in empathy. And I think role playing is great in that it encourages that. There's so much about our life that does not encourage that. We're so encouraged to be inside of ourselves, to be inside of the now. I work as a programmer. I'm not rewarded for going to work and pretending I'm somebody else. In fact, I'd probably lose my job for going to work and pretending that I'm somebody else.
Because you'd go to work as Batman.
Or Unicron. Or
if you eat hot dish, you can actually have the ability to really get into somebody else's head quite
well,
easily.
I was going to say that this is a topic of immense importance to me, because I think that there is inherent value to role-playing, and not just role-playing, but imagination games that we stop benefiting from when we stop playing them around double digits age-wise. Mm-hmm. I think empathy is a tool that you can work at and grow. And certainly some people have that ability in greater or lesser quantities just based on physicality. But I don't think it's entirely just physicality. I think it's a muscle and you have to work at it. And that we're all better off, even in an office setting, when we can empathize with what someone's going through rather than just sympathizing, or working, even worse, just working towards their own goals. All of the best projects come out of collaboration and innovation. And those are the things that role-playing games uphold and teach.
Yeah, that's why improvisers get paid thousands of dollars to go into corporate offices and teach people how not to be assholes to each other for like half an hour.
I absolutely agree. And neuroelasticity, or neuroplasticity, I suppose, more accurately, is a growing area of research where we're finding out that the human mind is a whole lot more flexible than for most of history we believed it to be. I hate corporate pop organizational psych books, but there is one book in particular that I really love. I don't know if any of you guys have read it. I'm going to presume not, because it's kind of a weird book, but it's called The Power of Zap. And what The Power of Zap is it's this short book, maybe 50-100 pages most, that tells this kind of fairy tale about a guy in an office environment who creates this device. And when he turns it on, he can see the emotional realities of the world around him in physical space. Okay, so he experiences them as if they were real. So if somebody's like panicked and angry, then in this space they would appear to be on fire or whatever. And the basic message of the book is fundamentally very simple. It's the idea that you are not the only human mind in the workspace. That the things you do have a palpable effect upon the people around you. And if you're cognizant of that, once again, if you experience empathy or try to develop empathy, that it's going to decrease your desire to be an asshole because that pain affects you more directly. And you also realize you're going to get less out of that kind of behavior than you would get out of treating people with respect. And I think you hit on something absolutely true, Kat, when you were talking about how the kinds of play and the kinds of hobbies that we participate in change over age. Because when we're young, we are so encouraged to imagine, to project ourselves in other places, to be other people in other times, to pretend whatever. I'm Batman, I'm playing house. I don't know if that's a thing kids still do or not, but you know, whatever it is.
It is. We can tell you definitively. Oh, yeah. It is.
But as you get older, it's more about not only what's in the here and now, but oftentimes it's somebody else in the here and now. I mean, sports, and I'm not one to bag on sports because I enjoy watching sports and such, and I don't have this sports ball geek sort of mental divide.
But, it's really boring.
But if you watch sports, you're not only not really empathizing with another human being, you're not even part of it. You're watching what they do and responding to it instead of really even internalizing that and trying to expand yourself. And indeed, if you go after that type of thing, if you say, well, I want to have toys and play make-believe or whatever, suddenly you're childish, you're immature.
Far be it from us to discourage people from watching or listening to other people playing a game.
But I think that that is the value in what we're doing, is hopefully the biggest compliment people pay us isn't saying that they like us, that they listen to us, that it's that they finally
went out,
got the courage to go out, yeah, grab a game that they knew that they'd like and start playing for the first time, you know, exploring this part of themselves that they felt cut off from previously.
And I think that's something that people who are existing gamers, who they have that inherent understanding of the enjoyment of those when they are adults and play that stuff, to be appropriately enthusiastic about what it is they love to do. You know, everybody at my job knows that I do this, that I play games, and that some people even know I'm occasionally on this podcast. And when people come up and talk to me about it, I don't shy away from that fact. I'm very open about it, to the point of saying, you know, if you are ever interested, please let me know. Maybe someday we can sit down at a table. I'll show you how to play. You'll really enjoy it. This is actually a really good thing for you to do.
It is incredibly liberating to hit an age where you no longer care who thinks you're cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And if I could go back and relive my life, one of the things that I would change, this would probably be in the top half dozen items I would change, is to have hit that point sooner. Because, you know, I think that...
You know, I never cared what people think about me.
No, you didn't.
It's great. It's so freeing. You just get to be yourself and you get to enjoy life.
Yeah, certainly, I am against the huge amount of cultural shame that gets passed on people when they express any sort of interest in art forms like, you know, role playing or improv or any sort of performance or indulgence of human emotion. I think it is to society's detriment, which is why I so strongly believe, and I know Kat so strongly believes, in these games. And that's why we are spending so much time week after week trying to get these games into the hands of more people.
We're going to close out the show in the way that we do all of our interview episodes, which is we want to give you guys an
opportunity. A dance party.
Yes. We want to give you guys a sexy dance party.
It's a very exciting radio.
So it's like a sexy version of Ellen.
And audio only. You would not believe how exciting that is. But I want to give you guys a chance to talk about what you've got going on and what you've got coming up you want to draw people's attention to. We talked about your one-shot and campaign shows. Where do people go to find that? And of course, I'll also put this in the show notes, but let's give it an audio form as well. Where do people find your material?
That would be at oneshotpodcast.com. The feed is right there. We've got our links to iTunes right there. You can listen to all of our shows for free. We're also on pretty much every major podcatcher out there. So whatever your podcast app of choice is, just look for the One Shot Podcast or the Campaign Podcast.
So oneshotpodcast.com, and that's got a link to both the One Shot and Campaign?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And that will be in the show notes for anyone who's looking for it. I know you guys mentioned you also have a Patreon to support the things that you're doing.
We do. And I will take time even on your show to thank all of our backers.
Thank you
so much. Very recently, they unlocked for me the ability to take one day of work off a week and just do one-shot stuff.
Yeah.
So beginning that slow transition into doing performance and games professionally, thank you guys so much. With all that, I will... before we get into it, I have to remind everybody that Kat can do that too. So if you like what we're doing, please support us. We are actually just a couple hundred dollars a month away from getting Kat to get her one day a month.
Something you guys don't know is that James doesn't have things like grammatical editing skills. But I unlock a lot of potential.
Yes.
And I can certainly tell anyone listening firsthand that these podcasts do take a lot of effort to put out. So certainly think about contributing something back for the free entertainment that shows like theirs and shows like ours provide. Is there anything else outside of the One Shot and Campaign podcast that you guys have got coming up that you want to draw people's attention to or get them to start thinking about or start getting excited about?
Well, there is Epiphany.
Let's talk about Epiphany.
So Kat and I are designing our first role-playing system together. It is a role-playing system that is designed to emulate movies and stories like Groundhog Day, Stranger Than Fiction, or Christmas Carol. It centers on a single protagonist, and everybody else at the table plays GM-like figures called the Fates that sort of bicker and argue and fight over the protagonist's destiny. It's a game that is about dynamic characters who change over the course of a story through magical realism.
So it sounds kind of like Monsters and Other Childish Things, except only one child.
Sounds more like a Wes Anderson movie.
Sounds like your mom.
That's
my mother is a Wes Anderson movie. That would be awesome because I would have millions of dollars.
That would be a great movie.
She would be very symmetrical.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean
to
be really.
It would also mean your mom is probably Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
My mom is Jack Zizou. No, Steve Zizou. Sorry.
So with Epiphany, is this purely in the works? Is there something where people can go to get early information on it?
We do have a beta that we are still working on. We will make it publicly available as the beta version while we're finishing the final design elements before we go to a crowdfunding source, as we do not have the kind of money that we would need lying around. So I would say hopefully within the next couple of months, you'll be able to see something. We don't have any firm dates yet. But if you are one of our backers on Patreon at the $5 a month level, you can hear actual plays of us running Epiphany. And that's not just with us. That's with gaming industry folks like Darren Watts or Kenneth Height or Will Hindmarch. They were all kind enough to help us out at Metatopia with the design process. So even if you're a prospective designer and you just want to learn a little bit more about the playtesting process, or if you're a curious person who wants to see how games come together, it's an interesting thing.
And $5 a month is a very reasonable amount. It's a lot less than most trip to Starbucks. It's certainly less than that Renoir painting you guys all had your eyes on.
I guarantee it's a great deal. Everybody wastes $5 a month.
Additionally, there are a number of interviews with us out there about Epiphany. One with Nerdette. What's the other
big Nerdette, one? The WBEZ's Nerdette podcast. We talk about it. We had an interview with the RPG Academy.
Right. That really delved into it. It's a project we're really passionate about. And you could also, if you're curious, just hit us up on Twitter. James is at OneShotRPG. I'm at MailMandalorian.
Spelled?
James, you can find it from James's. He retweets me all the time. Yeah. Just find me there.
That's like mailman as in postal worker.
Yeah, and we'd be happy to discuss it.
James and Kat, I want to thank you guys very much for joining us. It's a lot of fun having you on, and I certainly look forward to seeing what you guys do with One Shot, with Campaign, and also with this upcoming Epiphany game.
Well, thank you guys so much for having us on the show.
This was a blast. Thank you so much.
It's always fun to talk gaming with people.
Absolutely.
And, you guys are nice people to talk gaming with.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, we do okay.
As for you guys at home, once again, check the show notes for links to all this stuff to find out where you can check out James and Kat and their really wonderful group of people that are doing these great things for the hobby, and all the other links we're going to stick in there. There's a few things that we, meaning Chad and me and Chris, referred to that we'll be linking as well. So be sure to check all that out. As always, have a great week and great games, and we will catch you guys next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2015. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com. And just to prove that point, Chris, shove a hot dish up your ass.
Who's to say I already don't have one?
I'll probably edit that out. So
probably, yeah. Probably edit it.
It depends on how the spirit hits me.
Logistically, it's unlikely.
Yeah.
And by probably, he means absolutely he won't do that.